You may not be going back to school like your kids, but learning about new subjects never stops.
Day after day after day.
On 55 KRC, the talk station. KRC, the talk station. Happy Joe's birthday.
Let's go, Brandon.
Still get a kick out of that. It's 5:05 and a very happy Wednesday to you. Again, Joe Strecker's birthday, so happy birthday to Joe. Happy birthday to Joe. And coming up at the 55 KRC Morning Show, always enjoy talking to Congressman Thomas Massey, who will join the program at 8:05. Speaking of Let's Go Brandon, economy saying Let's Go Brandon over Joe Biden's vaccine mandates. We'll talk about that in a moment because, you know, there is no OSHA mandate yet. There is no federal mandate yet. It's kind of an interesting reality we have here. We have businesses, including airlines out there, talking about, well, we're moving ahead with the like, for example, in Texas, where the governor has banned the enforcement of vaccine mandates, obviously in conflict with federal law. If there were a federal law in place, there isn't one yet. So we're sitting here waiting. The lawsuits have been filed. There will be more lawsuits filed. Talk about that a little bit. But the OSHA hasn't finished completing the rule yet. Then it gets to go to the legal department, and people get to humph and harumph and talk about it, amend it, and then it gets challenged in courts, and there will be injunctions. And, you know, we're a long way away from a federal mandate. Not long, long way away, but we're a long way away from the resolution of whatever mandate OSHA ultimately issues. So we'll see. And it will certainly be challenged on the basis it's being issued as an emergency. There has to be a grave threat to your existence for this rule to even kick in, this emergency power. Otherwise, you have a very long process of creating these regulations. So that is certainly going to be a wonderful topic of conversation with Congressman Massey. Biden's war on women of childbearing age and minorities. What's that all about? Plus, how to govern when the GOP task majority will check out his Twitter thread. Thomas Massey, very active on Twitter as well as Facebook in terms of speaking his mind. I always love the conversations with him. Oh, I also enjoy, of course, Judge Anna Napolitano coming up at 8:30. When our secret's not secret, that is the title of his op-ed piece, which, of course, I'm very happy to get an advance copy of because I talk with him on Wednesdays. It'll be released tonight at midnight, but we'll go over that in some detail at 8:30. We'll also talk about Guantanamo detainees case, which, you know, and I know Judge Napolitano has legitimate constitutional complaints about locking people up in Guantanamo Bay and not charging them with anything. I mean, I tend to agree on some level. You want to be able to prosecute folks, but in order to prosecute folks at Guantanamo, you see, the CIA would have to give up some very, very secret information. How is it you determine that guy deserves to go into Guantanamo? How did you determine he was a terrorist or someone who was planning acts of terrorism against the United States? How is it that you swept up and gathered the number of people that at once, you know, there were a lot more in Guantanamo Bay than there are now, but, and you just leave them there? There's no due process. There's no trial. Sounds like something that maybe China would do. Anyway, we'll hear 8:45 from Joyce Lovins Browning. She's going to do an Empower You seminar, The Body Snatcher's Wife. That should be interesting. And, of course, it's always interesting talking with you. So call, feel free, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones. Where'd it go? This case out of Loudoun County is kind of crazy. I don't know if you've been following it. I mean, it's one school board. It's one county in all. I mean, you think of the multitude of counties we've got in the United States. I mean, it's like, what are there, 88 in Ohio alone? But Loudoun County, Virginia has been an explosive source of information and illustration of the challenges parents are facing at school boards and in opposition to some of the crazy policies that the and materials that your children are being taught in school. This is a benefit of the COVID-19 that I keep pointing out. Parents finally started paying attention, and they were shocked by what they saw. This goes beyond that. Now, back in June, a parent got arrested. You may have seen it, a viral video, and, of course, a school board National School Board Association, who's the one that is responsible for sicking Merrick Garland and the FBI on your on you, the parents. This guy is at a school board meeting, and he wanted to know about why there seemed to be a cover-up of an alleged bathroom sexual assault by what is described as a gender-fluid individual. Basically, this was a guy in a skirt who is alleged to have raped one of the Loudoun school children, a girl who was in her own bathroom, and they've got a guy coming in, a transgender issue. And the charges are really actually horrific. Notably, this boy was charged with two counts of forcible sodomy, one count of anal sodomy, and one count of forcible fellatio. Those are the charges that have been levied against this high school age student. And it goes back to the parent of the child that was raped, Scott Smith, ultimately found guilty of disorderly conduct and resisting arrest after he was filmed being dragged by police from the school board meeting on June 22nd. Sentenced to 10 days in jail, but that sentence was suspended, contingent on a year of good behavior. Again, he was used as one of these alleged crazy, you know, right-wing fanatical people that, gee, the school boards need to be protected against. As it turns out, that's not how the story really unfolded. He said at the June 22nd meeting and his behavior, his ultimate arrest, stemmed from an incident weeks early involved at his ninth grade daughter's school, which is Stonebridge High School in Ashburn, in which he said a boy wearing a skirt entered the girl's bathroom and assaulted his daughter. Okay, this is at a June 22nd school board meeting, right? That's an important, critical date. That's the day he got arrested. That's the day when he brought this to the school board's attention, or at least asked about it. The sheriff's office, speaking with Fox News, quote, "We can confirm a May 28th, 2021 case that involved a thorough 2-month-long investigation that was conducted to determine the facts of the case prior to the arrest. This case is still pending court proceedings. Loudoun County Sheriff's Office is not able to provide any documents that pertain to a pending case. The sheriff's office confirmed that the case involved sexual assault. Juvenile records are sealed, but, of course, they've got lawyers. Scott Smith's lawyer, a woman named Elizabeth Lancaster, speaking with the Daily Wire, said that the boy was subsequently charged, as I told you, with those horrific crimes. And in response to a public records request, the Loudoun County Sheriff's Office confirmed that a May 28th report with the office or the offense, forcible sodomy and sexual battery at Stonebridge High, does in fact exist. So there is no doubt that there is currently a criminal investigation and certainly a prosecution involving this incident, the incident that this guy was asking about at the June 22nd meeting. Now, right before his arrest, at the June 22nd meeting, Loudoun County Public Schools Superintendent Scott Ziegler said, and I quote, quote, "The predator transgender student or person simply does not exist. We don't have any record of assaults occurring in our restroom." An assault, remember the minutes, the June 22nd board meeting, the assault occurred May 28th. And that's when he blew up in the meeting. That's he flew into a rage. What do you mean this doesn't exist, basically? Are you kidding me? This is my ninth grade daughter I'm talking about here. There's a police record of this. We let you know about it. We called the cops. They're denying the existence of this person's, this molester's, they're denying this molester's existence, really, at this school board meeting. It's really hard to fathom. Smith's attorney said if someone would have sat and listened for 30 seconds to what Scott had to say, they would have been mortified and heartbroken. He was at this meeting and some local progressive activist said she didn't believe his story, tapped him on the shoulder and basically told him he was a liar. On August 11th, 2 months after Smith's arrest, the school board then voted to approve its transgender rights policy. Now, think about that. This transgender rights policy, which allows, you know, people of any sex to go into any bathroom they damn well please, and you got to call people by their, you know, specific pronouns, et cetera. You know, the woke curriculum and this move we're moving toward. Isn't it odd that they would deny the existence of this transgender sexual assault in the bathroom while they're trying to advance the pro-transgender policy? Shocking, doesn't it? I mean, this just comes as a total surprise to you, I'm sure. But on that August 11th, when they approved its transgender policy at the Loudoun County School Board meeting, Mr. Smith, the guy that got arrested, said he got a letter before the vote telling him he was banned from the school board building. We will not hear you. Your story flies in the face of our narrative. And at one point, I think one of the school board members cited a 2016 Time article claiming that, you know, your and my and many people's concerns about, you know, women being accosted by, you know, transgender women, the guys that were formerly guys and now believe they're women, in bathrooms was a distinct possibility. And this Time magazine said, no, that just doesn't happen. It never happens. This flies in the face of that. This flies in the face of the easy advancement of this LGBTQ pronoun bathroom-related policy at the school board. They don't want his voice heard. So they deny the existence of this incident to his face after knowing about it, and then they refuse to allow him in a meeting where they're going to, you know, advance this policy that could result in more cases similar to what happened to his daughter. On October 6th, the sheriff's office said a 15-year-old boy, this is kind of interesting, 15-year-old boy was charged with sexual battery, abduction of a fellow student at the Broad Run High School in Ashburn. Press release the following day, sheriff's office said the suspect forced a female victim into an empty classroom where he held her against her will and inappropriately touched her. The outlet, citing a government official, reported the boy accused in that case had the same name as the student who allegedly assaulted Smith's daughter. So it's widely believed, and I think appropriate to conclude, that you have seems to be a recidivist rapist running amok and being protected by the Loudoun County Schools. It's okay, though. According to the reporting, that high school student, that kid, this alleged rapist, was transferred. They moved him to a different school, so everything's okay. 518 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station. 749-55. KRCD Talk Station. A very happy Wednesday to you. Listener Lunch Day. Swamp Water Grill. Hope you can go. Hope you can make it. Since I was talking about the Loudoun County School and the arrest of this guy who was concerned about the rape of his daughter, and of course, Loudoun County Board denying the existence of that case, the existence of the rapist, and then find out that, well, they lied. They're trying to cover it up, and parents are now demanding the resignation of the school board president for lying. Anyway, that takes me over to the Patriot Act, which, of course, the Biden administration unleashed, Attorney General Merrick Garland unleashed on you, the parents, pursuing and this complaint about unruly parents. You know, they're claiming they're basically terrorists. We need protection from these evil people who are concerned about their children. Of course, he issued a letter saying that they would do just that. When asked about whether the Patriot Act should be used to monitor parents at school board meetings, Jen Psaki, the, of course, White House press secretary, said, and I'll quote, "The Attorney General has put out a letter. They will take actions they take. And I would point you to them for more information." How about that? Okay, look over there. Don't ask me. I only speak for the White House. Jim Sensenbrenner, who was actually one of the authors of the Patriot Act, was commenting on this. It was enacted after September 11th, right, to try to prevent foreign terrorist attacks on American soil. Legislation defines terrorism as unlawful acts of violence or acts dangerous to human life intended to intimidate, coerce a civilian population, or to affect conduct of government by, and I will quote, mass destruction, assassination, or kidnapping, close quote. Hey, Joe, remember all those school board meetings we've read around where they're assassinating people and they're blowing things up? Remember those? Yeah, they're reported all the time, aren't they? It wasn't intended to keep angry parents from speaking their minds. Nonetheless, it's going to be used against them. Sensenbrenner wrote today, and when debating the Patriot Act and other federal anti-terrorism laws, nobody in either chamber of commerce could have imagined these laws would be turned against concerned parents at local school board meetings. Yet on October 4th, Mr. Garland issued a memorandum that will live in infamy. It directs the Federal Bureau of Investigation and U.S. attorneys to develop strategies. This is in the letter. Strategies for addressing threats against school administrators, board members, teachers, and staff. This after the National School Board Association complained. He points out logically and reasonably, federal agencies lack roving jurisdiction to investigate and prosecute non-criminal conduct. They also lack authority to invoke federal anti-terrorism laws to chill protected expressive conduct. The memorandum violates the letter and spirit of federal law approved by bipartisan, bicameral congressional majorities. He's talking about the Patriot Act, which we could all have criticisms over. Look, hey, look what it's being used for now. And he points out the obvious again. It's going to be chilling to free speech unless this memorandum is immediately withdrawn. It'll undermine civil liberties, erode public confidence in federal law enforcement, and most critically, divert federal resources from actual, real terrorist threats. Unbelievable. Yep. Welcome to the Biden administration. You know, we're talking about fascism, Now, who's the fascist? The Biden administration or the evil Trump administration who was inclined to give you school choice vouchers? That was a push then. Of course, who stood in the way of that? Democrats and teachers unions. They don't want you to have choice. They want your children stuck in front of them, and they sure as hell don't want you to know what they're talking about. We have something to thank COVID for, again, 526, 55 KRC, the talk station. Landing Event Center, what a wonderful place to have your next party, your event. Wedding shower, maybe. Maybe wedding party, reception afterwards. Landing Event Center, beautiful downtown Loveland. And it's a cool building it's got a rustic look to it, two-story fireplace, reclaimed historic oak frame timbers from some of the former. Ah, 5:31 on a Wednesday, and a happy Wednesday. Listener Lunch Wednesday again. Swamp Water Grill. Usually meet about 11:30. You feel free to come a skosh earlier, a skosh later if you like. And I've got my fingers crossed. Maybe we'll see from some of our local, hopefully to be elected officials. Swamp Water Grill, Kellogg Avenue. The information I'm sure you can easily find. Just search Facebook for Swamp Water or search it on Google. Anyhow, over to local stories, Ohio State Highway Patrol said one person was injured during a stabbing. This at a rest area in Butler County, right off I-75, about 11:55 a.m., northbound rest stop in Liberty Township. Troopers found Gladio Ann, 41, Cincinnati, in a parking lot rest area. They learned that Ann and the suspect knew each other, and the suspect fled the scene. Trooper said the suspect's vehicle later stopped on I-75 in Allen County, where he was taken into custody and taken to Atrium Medical Center with non-life-threatening injuries. Check it out. Ohio lawmakers will have a second marijuana legalization proposal in front of them, drafted by a Republican and sponsored by Republican Representatives James Callender of Concord and Ron Ferguson of Wintersville. Similar to the other proposal, in that it would build on the state's existing medical marijuana program, and he is hoping that lawmakers will like his over the industry-backed effort to pass the law through the ballot box. Current medical marijuana cultivators, processors, and dispensary owners would be allowed to operate on the recreational side. Adults age 21 and older could buy, possess, and grow marijuana. bill also provide a way for Ohioans convicted of marijuana crimes eliminated in the bill to have records sealed or expunged. Counter says three or four Republicans support the bill, but legislative leaders and Governor Michael DeWine do not. Calendar said House Speaker Bob Kupp of Lima does not support recreational use, but will give legislators a chance to have hearings on the bill. Oh, isn't that nice of him? Anyhow, Calendar believes now is a better time than ever to pass a bill. Para-Democrats introduced a legalization bill over the summer, and an industry-backed proposal could be on the ballot next year. So Calendar's plan, 10% tax applied to the recreational marijuana sales, which really kind of scratched my head over that one. If you can grow it at home, there's going to be no taxation. I mean, get Ron Wilson in here. He'll probably teach you how to grow a weed plant. What's the difference between that and a tomato plant? I have no idea. Anyway, legalization, I believe, is coming in some form or other. It just seems to be the writing on the wall nationally. Two additional Butler County Sheriff's deputies going to be patrolling Liberty Township. They got a new contract. It's an addendum, rather, approved last week. The new deputies will patrol exclusively in Liberty Township, joining 18 other deputies patrolling the township. Lieutenant Mike Nutt quoted as saying, "We're trying to get them out on the road as soon as possible." He's responsible for Liberty Township Substation Sheriff's Office. Trustee contact with the Sheriff's Office for Police Service, which includes deputies, detectives and supervisors. The current 5-year contract expires at the end of 2024. There's a three mil levy that provides the funds for this. First approved in 2009, renewed in 2014 and 2019. About $2.6 million annually it brings in. Annual cost per officer, pay, benefits and equipment, $91,054 for 2022. Cincinnati police identified a man killed in a drive-by shooting. This happened Tuesday afternoon in Evanston. About 1:30, police showed up and reported shooting in the 3500 block of Montgomery Road. Investigators say Yarsele Sammy Sr., 39 years old, shot the corner of Montgomery Road and Clarion Avenue about 1. He was standing in the corner when someone in a four-door maroon sedan drove by and just started shooting at him. Before officers showed up on the scene, police say Sammy was taken to the hospital in a personal vehicle. He succumbed to his injuries once he showed up at UC Medical Center. Shortly before 2 p.m., officers were at the scene investigating the shooting and blocked off Montgomery Road between Brewster and Dana. No information on whether the suspects were caught yet. I presume they aren't, and I presume the Sheriff's Department would love to hear about from you if you know anything about that one. It's 5:35 right now, 55 KRCD Talk Station. Foreign exchange, get your imported car fixed. Five 40 right now. Happy Wednesday. Care to call, say something, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, or pound 550 on AT&T phones. Joe and I just experiencing our age, and every once in a while you see a fun fact that kind of like, oh my God, has it been that long? Am I that old? I just looked one of my favorite bands of all time, Soundgarden, and of course Chris Cornell, my favorite singer, rock singer of all time, the late, the great. Bad Motor Finger came out 30 years ago yesterday. And then Joe's saying, oh, yeah, he goes, 1991, both Guns N' Roses albums, right? You got Nevermind from Nirvana. You got Pearl Jam's 10. Bad Motor Finger from Soundgarden. Did I miss one? The Black Album from Metallica? Joe said he spent a lot of his limited resource money at that young age in the record store. Remember record stores? And I remember buying Pearl Jam's 10 when I was on a business trip to Detroit practicing law. I had a huge case up there, and I had to go back and forth to Detroit all the time. So remember the days of those portable Walkman CD players that would skip like crazy? Yep, that was me. Anyway.
Hey, little Grandpa.
Yeah, I know. Don't do that to me. I got kids that are old enough. Well, hell, I won't even go there. Go to the stack of stupid, though. Female passenger parading through Denver International Airport concourse last month, naked. Says here, she drew attention from fellow passengers and, of course, the airport's police. No kidding.
As is tradition.
Woman with no luggage, appeared to be carrying some kind of a thermos bottle or drink holder in her right hand. Beyond that, buck naked. She was walking by bystanders asking things like, how are you doing? Where are you from? There's a minute-long video shared with local news. Denver police officers with a large blanket can be seen following the woman in an attempt to cover her up. She was smiling and laughing. Joe, you want to pick a drug you think was involved here? Police can be heard calling to the woman, ma'am. One point, she skips away from police while they were trying to wrap her up. Took place near gate 837 about 5 a.m. September 19th, according to the Denver police. In the report, airport police wrote that they received a report of an intoxicated female completely nude. Officers responded, located her running around the concourse, having some type of medical issue. Paramedics were called, code 10, which indicates emergency response. She was transported to University Hospital by ambulance due to an undetermined medical episode. No further information about the woman's strange behavior was reported. medical issue. Maybe drug-induced medical issue. This sounds like fun. Or maybe a way to get alcohol poisoning. One pub-loving Brit, going to the UK for this one, set a new world record, or thinks he set a new world record, for drinking in the most pubs over a 24-hour period. Pub fan Matt Ellis set off on this challenge to drink in as many pubs as possible around Cambridgeshire. He managed to drink a combination of Diet Coke, orange juice, beer, wine, soda water, and more as he visited 51 pubs, calling it the most difficult or one of the most difficult things he's ever done. He said the time issue was not a problem, but just the amount of liquid you need to drink was the challenge. We had a break for lunch, but I just could not eat anything after drinking. We had a combination of drinks, apple juice, orange juice, beer, wine, and lots of soda water. I was not uncomfortable, but I was going to the loo quite a lot throughout the night, and I definitely won't be doing that again for sure. He runs a wine merchant's. I guess maybe a way of promoting his business.
Idiots doing idiot things because they're idiots.
He called every single pub that he visited in advance to make sure they were okay with him coming in and doing this challenge. He started the 24-hour crawl on Sunday in Cambridge's The Regal, ended up at The Weeping Ash in a place called St. Neots on Monday. He had to consume, apparently this is the record thing, challenge meant he had to consume 125 milliliters of any drink at each pub. Continuously filmed via GoPro just to prove that he visited them. Now it's off to be officially verified by the Guinness World Book of Records, or Book of World Records, I should say. Two independent witnesses were also required, and even staff at the pubs had to verify that he had drank the entire drink at each stop. So lots of people involved in that pointless exercise. 545, 55 KRC, the talk station. Talk for the VA, since a VA, and I thank the VA for what they're doing for my veteran friends. And God bless you all over there doing the hard work and working through the pandemic and everything. This is 550 at 55 Care City Talk Station. There you go, Joe. Taking us back 30 years. He just went through the list of 91 released albums. And there's a whole lot more than the ones we just ran through. Making it feel old. I am blessed to have been able to see Soundgarden. That was an awesome show. Got to see him in Chicago. Anyway, also got to see Chris Cornell a few times. Age. Back to the Stack of Stupid. This is disgusting. I think this is award worthy, Joe. Believing that somebody had been entering her barn without permission, a Florida woman, naturally, wait to hear what happens, set up a trail camera inside the barn. Her name, Catherine Engel. Speaking with police last month, she said she installed the trail camera inside the four-stall Vero Beach barn where her horses are kept. This after she discovered ligature marks around one of the horses' necks and also recalled finding bungee cords and ropes around the neck of a miniature horse, even though she never placed any bungee cords on the horse, raising suspicions. The camera, according to police, captured a man named Santiago Victoria, who's 57. He was entering the barn late at night, invading a stall occupied by a horse named Mariah. Oh, we haven't gotten there yet. We will, though. During the three separate encounters, Victoria, quote, gets behind the horse in a sexual manner, close
Phrasing.
Quote, according to the arrest affidavit. Indian River Sheriff's Office provided a graphic account of Victoria's alleged illicit conduct inside the barn. Engel identified Victoria after the suspect telling cops that he worked for a wedding company that parks vehicles on the same property when the barn is, or where the barn is situated. When they confronted him at his residence, he reportedly, in their words, admitted to having sexual intercourse with the horse, but just couldn't remember how many times.
What?
Oh, that's off the charts. That's one of those, I did it so many times, I can't count kind of things. Investigators say Victoria acknowledged that he did not have permission to be inside the barn. I'm shocked. He was arrested on three felony charges, booked into the county jail where he's being held in lieu of a $75,000 bond. He's previously been convicted of DUI and violating probation, now scheduled for arraignment down in the end of November. Judge ordered him to stay away from Engel's five-acre Vero Beach property. Why not all horses as well? I think I'd have a pretty wide order restraining that guy from any physical contact with anything that's living. Jeez Louise, there's some twisted people.
Here he is, the biggest douche
yeah.
in the universe. In all the galaxies, there's no bigger douche than
Beastiality.
You.
Why are you doing that?
Amen.
You reach the top, the pinnacle of douchedom. Good going, douche. Your dreams have come true.
You know, Joe...
Vaccination requirements.
The right decision.
And this unlawful mandate.
We call it news.
What's coming next?
It's going to happen right here.
On 55 KRC, the talk station.
Let's go, Brandon.
It is 6:06 here at 55 KRC TV Fox Station. Getting on a theme here, which I enjoy, rolling out a little more Soundgarden. 30 years since Bad Motorfinger came out. And we will never, ever, ever see another year like 1991, at least in terms of major releases. The record industry has just changed too dramatically. Just really, really has. Anyhow, I am right here, Brian Thomas, my executive producer, Joe Strecker, who is always internet research guru, all-around great guy. Happy birthday to Joe. It is his birthday, so you can feel free to call him and wish him happy birthday if you like. Feel free to call me and comment on anything that's going on, like the COVID-19 vaccine is mandate, rather, is moving closer to approval. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on your AT&T phone. Excuse me. Little froggy in my throat. Anyway, people talking about Biden's COVID-19 vaccine mandate. Well, they haven't drafted it yet, but it's getting close. Labor Department is now, at least took steps yesterday to implement Biden's brainchild to require private sector workers to be vaccinated or regularly tested. Of course, this is the one that's going to apply to businesses with more than 100 employees. It will be implemented under the federal rulemaking known as an emergency temporary standard and affect, of course, half of the entire United States workforce. And it's a critical thing to remember, emergency temporary standard. All right. OSHA, which is under the Labor Department, submitted yesterday the initial text of the proposed standard. Notice the emphasis I'm placing on initial and proposed. It's not in effect yet. And all these businesses scrambling out to issue these edicts and mandates on vaccines, you know, it would be better to wait and to see what exactly the rule says, how it applies, what exemptions are allowed, if any. And, of course, how do you deal with Texas, where Greg Abbott has issued an executive order that bans businesses from, requiring COVID-19 vaccinations? This is called a legal Charlie Foxtrot. You're going to deal with the supremacy clause on this one of the United States Constitution. Federal government and state laws can conflict sometimes, and which one has supremacy over the other requires an analysis of under the constitutional case law. So this is all running headlong into major litigation. In fact, there already have been some lawsuits that have been filed. We'll get to that. Executives claiming to be waiting to see the mandate's details before making changes to corporate policies, which would be the right directions. Others have already implemented vaccine requirements. Smaller businesses, of course, worried about the cost of this, as well as how it's going to be monitored. I mean, are OSHA agents going to come wandering around and doing random tests of you? No, no, it gets scary. Now, remember, the proposed standard apparently directs employees to provide paid time off so you can go get your vaccine. So you're going to get an hour or two of paid time off, PTO for vaccines. Fine. Fines of up to $13,600 per violation. That was what was that's what came out of Biden's mouth. I haven't seen the actual rule yet. We're waiting for OSHA. OSHA officials said the agency is likely to provide assistance to help businesses comply before resorting to enforcement measures. Like when I read that, I was like, "Well, what? Assistance to help businesses comply? Is that some sort of monetary assistance?" The PTO, or is OSHA going to now start reimbursing businesses or something? Do they have the congressional authority to do that? Anyway, the head of OSHA between 2009 and 2017, a guy named David Michaels, said that enforcement of the new standard wouldn't likely rely primarily on in-person inspections, but are you ready? But naturally, company record keeping, but also worker reports of potential violations. Yep. Michaels, who's now a professor at George Washington University School of Public Health, I guess speaking with the Wall Street Journal, workers, quote, will be OSHA's eyes and ears, close quote. Yes, so you and your fellow employees are going to be charged with spying on each other and reporting and ratting each other out to OSHA for any potential violation, naturally. Now, I mentioned lawsuits. Arizona Attorney General Mark Brnovich filed a lawsuit challenging the standard even before it was issued. He said he and 23 other Republican state attorneys general sent a letter to Mr. Biden back in September saying that they would seek every available legal option if they didn't drop this plan, this OSHA mandate. And, of course, the greatest argument I think we've got on this is it doesn't meet the justification that is required under the laws that were passed relating to OSHA's regulatory standards over emergency issues. They don't issue emergency orders very often. Emergency temporary standards, I should say. They haven't done it very much at all. 9 in its 50-year history. Now, according to OSHA, I'm sorry, strike that, according to the law. Remember? Remember your schoolhouse rock? The bill was passed into law. It contains specific provisions. OSHA can issue emergency temporary standards, which relieves them of the lengthier process for federal rulemaking. Therein lies the rub. It takes a while to get a regulation through, and we all should be very happy about that. Because the fewer the regulations, the more likely you and I are to be able to prosper and without government oversight and fines rolling in. But we'll leave that entire broader discussion for another day. But it takes a while to go through the legitimate, lawful federal rulemaking process unless it's an emergency temporary standard. All right? When can emergency temporary standards be issued? When employees are exposed to grave danger from toxic or physically harmful substances or agents or from new hazard. But it also states, you may argue, well, heck, that's what COVID is. That is a dangerous, toxic substance. It's physically harmful. But the law says the standard must be, quote, necessary to protect employees from such danger, close quote. Necessary. You're going to have a problem with that one in a court of law, I would argue. And that's the challenge. And that's the challenge that Arizona Attorney General Mark Brnovich issued. Dude, this isn't an emergency standard. This is an emergency situation. This has been out and about, and it looks like it's going to remain out and about with different variants and vaccine booster shots. It's like the flu, for God's sake. There's no OSHA regulation regarding the flu shot, is there? No. Also, compliance challenges are worrying some businesses. There's an advocacy group out there called Job Creators Network, opposes government regulation of businesses, said it also plans on suing to stop the mandate. claiming it will create liability and other concerns for smaller employers. Hey, so this government mandate has an outsized impact on small businesses, and we're going to defend them because we don't think they should have to police their employees, provide paid time off, or face these huge fines. That statement by Elaine Parker, who is the spokesperson for Job Creators Network. Amen, exclamation point. Let's go to the phone. Start with Dave this morning, 749-5500. Welcome, Dave. Happy Wednesday to you.
How you doing there, Brian?
I'm well, man. I hope you can say the same. It's on your mind.
Certainly. Listen, I really respect your opinion pieces are just, I think, amazing. But I have a question for you.
Absolutely.
And hopefully you'll have an answer of some sort.
Dave, I have that thought in the back of my mind every time somebody calls. Hopefully I will have a coherent response. Sometimes I just got to say, you know what? I have no idea. But roll it, Dave. Let's see what happens.
Okay, so there's a student very close to me that has been vaccinated.
Okay.
And now all of a sudden they say, oh, sorry, you can't come to school. You're around somebody with COVID. What do I tell that student now? I mean, he doesn't understand a lot of things like you and I do. What do I tell him?
Well, you can tell him that the policy, and insofar as how it affects him, just revealed itself to us. It doesn't make any sense. The vaccine was supposed to provide us with immunity. It doesn't provide us with immunity. Now we are told the vaccine merely limits the severity of COVID when you get it. When, not if, when. So because that person was somehow exposed, and what I would argue is go have him do a nasal swab test to prove that he doesn't have COVID so he can go back to his normal life. I mean, that swab is, I mean, even in the OSHA rule, they say if you're not vaccinated, I believe you can get swabbed on a regular basis to prove you don't have COVID so you can be around other people. To summarily subject that child to quarantine after being vaccinated and merely because that person was around someone who was infected, to me, isn't enough. You can't just shut someone's life off for 2 weeks just because they've been around someone. How about giving them a swab? If a swab can work, and I've got to get one, I'm going to see Elvis Costello. So I got to prove a negative COVID-19 test within 3 days of the concert. Could I get COVID-19 in that 3 days preceding the concert? Yep. Does anybody care? Nope. Does it make sense, Dave? Nope. None of it makes sense. So explain to him, and this is a great learning opportunity for the young people out there. Ask them to try to explain it to you. You can walk through those steps, and then you can look at them and say, in a Socratic method way, does that make any sense to you? And they're going to say no, and you're going to say exactly. And this is exactly why we need to be wary of government authorities, edicts, and dictates, and this just sort of random nature of what they're telling us to do and not do. This is an encroachment on our rights. It's an intrusion into our freedoms, and it's taking away valuable education time. Why? Because it's stupid. That's the best I can do, Dave. Good luck, and hang in there. Use it as a learning tool. Epic stupidity. Thanks, Dave. 617, 55 KRC, the talk station. Julian, Mike are online. You guys. It's 622 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station, and a very happy Wednesday. Over to the phones. Let's get to them. I promise Julian, Mike, they'd be first, and they are. Going to take them in order which they receive, which means Julie goes first. Julie, welcome to the program, and happy Wednesday to you.
Well, good morning, Brian. Hey, why can't the Biden administration be held in contempt of court when, about like a month ago, the Supreme Court came down with them, just said they have to remain in Mexico. The Trump's wonderful policy remain in Mexico. They're not following it. Why can't these state attorney generals take them back to court? They're like in contempt of court, the Supreme Court. Can you be that way?
Well, I think probably what this comes down to, it's almost a form of prosecutorial discretion. If you pick somebody up, I guess, then you can argue that the remain in Mexico policy should apply. It's a law that's on the books. There's that whole idea of if you pass through another interim country, if you're, you know, if you have some argument that you're under threat of political repercussions or execution or you're fleeing that kind of oppression, if you pass through a safer country, then you can't yank it all the way to America. You need to stay in that interim country. There's that. There's the stay in Mexico policy while your case is being adjudicated. But if you don't pick them up, you don't bother with it, you just let it go, you let folks just stream across the border with no processing, then I suppose the rule doesn't kick in. I mean, you got to do something to have an interaction with someone at the border in order for any of these laws to kick in. If you just turn your back and let people pour on in, as they seem to be doing, then there's no legal involvement. There's no interaction between the government and those who entered the country illegally. They remain off the radar, so to speak. I can't say for certain that's what's going on. And I will assure you that the silence, to the extent there is any among the various state AGs, it won't last long, that they're all collectively putting their feet down in one way or another. The situation is literally falling apart. It's broken. The border does not exist, and we are all going to be paying a heavy price for it sooner rather than later. Wish I could do a little bit better on that one, Julie. Hang in there and keep your fingers crossed that, well, those attorney generals will, in fact, take legal action. Mike, welcome to the program, and a very happy Wednesday to you, sir.
Well, thank you, buddy. You said you can go back 30 years. What was that, Rusty Bad Finger, something like that?
Bad Motor Finger is the name of the album from Soundgarden, one of my favorite groups, Mike. It's 30 years old yesterday.
Oh, my God, how young.
I know. What, are you going to dust off your copy of, Jerry Lee Lewis or something like that?
Oh, listen to this one, Patty Page. Hey, talking about epic stupidity, this Gruden character, regardless of how he feels, we all have our feelings about this, that, and the other. He sends an email, sending out emails, making remarks like that, and putting something like that in writing. That stupid stunt cost that joker tens of millions of dollars. Epic stupidity.
Well, that's what you get from elected officials from my perspective. At least that's my default perception, Mike. I know they're not all epic stupid. In fact, Congressman Massey's going to be on the program today. I would never for a moment even come close to saying he's stupid. The guy's a genius, MIT grad, patenter of many, many, many patents, and just a brilliant man. But he at least is aware that Guam cannot capsize. Most of the politicians we elect, just listen to what they say. And to the extent you're still inclined to follow them and believe them and do what they tell you to do, then I think you're part of the problem. Seriously. You got to man up. Make your own decisions. Or woman up, as the case may be. I think that covers both genders. 626 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station. You know what? You need a real estate agent. .631 at 55 KRCD Talk Station. Can we just play songs all day, Joe? The Temple of the Dog for you. And some local stories, unless you'd like to call and further go into the it's to the last caller. I thought for whatever reason, I know, and he's talking about that coach. It was a Redskins coach, Oakland coach got relieved of his employment situation because of some emails he sent out that were pretty rude. Joe gave me, filled me in on the backstory on that. I thought he said Putin, and I didn't know which emails he was referring to. My statement about politicians still applies. Anyhow. And Joe's biggest concern, and a lot of people's concern, the guy may have been deserved to be fired for what he did, and some of the, of course, inappropriate words that he used, but his emails were among like 600,000 other emails, and selectively they only chose to release a handful of his. Joe had also pointed out that he forwarded on some pictures of naked cheerleaders, which was a big brouhaha in the NFL over that one. Joe asked me, he goes, how come we don't know to whom he forwarded them and what their response to the receipt of pictures of naked cheerleaders was? Yeah, there's a ripple effect that kind of goes through all of this. The selective prosecution kind of goes back to my conversation with the caller earlier. You know, there's a reason we have prosecutorial discretion. This is, I suppose, media discretion. And they have an agenda. And they clearly wanted this guy fired for what he said. So he's being held out as an example by woke culture. And, of course, no one can forgive the words he used. But there are a whole lot of other people involved. The big question is, like, how come everybody else isn't losing their situation? Anyway. Local stories. Stabbing at a rest area. This happened in Butler County, right off I-75 yesterday afternoon, about noon. Northbound stop in Liberty Township. Troopers found a guy named Gladio Ann, A-N-N-E is his last name, 41 years old, in the parking lot of the rest area. He had, and the suspect in the stabbing knew each other. Suspect fled the scene. Vehicle later stopped on I-75, and that guy was taken into custody and taken to Atrium Medical Center with non-life-threatening injuries, which is good. Liberty Township's adding two deputies. They got a new contract with Butler County Sheriff, and that's a nice one. Police identified a man killed in a drive-by shooting yesterday afternoon in Evanston. 1:20 p.m., police showed up to a reported shooting in the 3500 block of Montgomery Road. 39-year-old Yarsele Sammy Sr. shot at the corner of Montgomery Road and Clarion Avenue about 1. He was standing on the corner with someone when a four-door maroon sedan drove by and started shooting at him. Before officers showed up, police said Sammy was taken to a local hospital in a personal vehicle but died once he arrived at University Hospital. So shortly after 2 p.m., officers at the scene investigating the shooting. They blocked off Montgomery Road between Brewster and Dana, and they are still looking, I suppose, for the murderer in this particular case. What a sad thing. Drive-by shootings. And you're right. Drew Pappas chimed in on the topic. Of course, Anderson Township will miss having him as a trustee, although Lexi Lawson, it will make a remarkable, it should be a remarkable improvement. I mean, for a whole host of reasons, not the least of which he's easier on the eyes than Drew Pappas, but we love Drew Pappas here. He reminded me, in spite of all this email scandal with the Oakland coach and being fired, nothing, or at least very little, no media coverage anyway, on the Hunter Biden emails, which, if you've dived into those and read some of them, you do realize that outside forces and influences were seeking to utilize him to gain access to, well, the Chinese, for example. But nothing to see there. No. Thank you for pointing that one out, Andrew. 635-55 KRCD Talk Station. If you'd like to point something out, please feel free to call 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, or #550 on AT&T phones. And I want to head on over to odorexit.com. Right now, 55 KRCD Talk Station. Happy hump day to you. My name is Brian Thomas. You can call me at 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. You can check out the blog page and podcast page at 55KRC.com anytime you can't listen live. Talked to Councilman David Mann yesterday about his mayoral race. Please vote for David Mann. Dave Williams from the Taxpayer Protection Alliance was on yesterday, as he does about once a month. Really great conversations. And, of course, you should get a copy of the book from Dr. Donald Crishlow, Revolutionary Monsters, and get it for your younger people. You can read it as well, but he wrote this book intentionally to appeal and explain in very easily understood terms about, you know, what happens when you follow these revolutionary crazies in the world, the Castros of the world, the Mugabes of the world, and how many people they end up murdering. Valuable book and valuable resource for you and, well, really kind of the future of America. Anyway, as I mentioned previously, I married out of my league. She's a lot smarter than me. And I was wondering, because I'd read that OSHA would be providing assistance to business once this rule formally gets rolled out. It's in sort of draft form presently, this rule that requires vaccines for all employers with more than 100 employees. And I thought, well, what do you mean, providing assistance with the no leave? What are they going to reimburse money or something? My wife pointed out that OSHA and other regulatory agencies provide technical assistance, that no money, just recommendations. So they're there for you to give you recommendations. Great. They're not there for you to help pay for the cost of dealing with the vaccination mandate. And she also pointed out a story that flew under my radar, but since we were talking about school board meetings and that horrific case out of Loudoun County, where a father whose daughter has, and I will say allegedly, only because they haven't fully prosecuted the rapist yet, but allegedly was horrifically molested in a bathroom by a trans student, but yet he ends up getting arrested merely because he's wanting to know what the story is from the school board. School board denied even knowing about it, in spite of the fact that, yeah, there was an investigation by the sheriff's department, and that kid is now currently under arrest. Denied his existence. Josh Mandel apparently got chucked out of a local school board meeting the other day. Senate candidate Josh Mandel, and I do like Josh. He was asked to leave the Lakota school board meeting that happened on Monday night. He was trying to speak on behalf of one of the folks there, and in his words, to defend the moms and dads regarding the mask mandate. In August, Lakota requires its 16,800 students to wear masks in class, and he was there, I think, just really basically pointing out that what a stupid and futile gesture that was. He said, here in the Lakota district and throughout the state of Ohio, children should not be forced to wear masks. And then he went into, on top of that, children should not be forced to learn to pick a gender or not pick a gender. Boys are boys, girls are girls. And, you know, that's kind of the way I view life. The way I view life, I guess that makes me, what, transphobic or something? No, I recognize the existence of transgender people. I'm just telling you that saying you're a different gender doesn't change the chromosomal reality of your gender. You can't do anything about that. It's why I keep going back to that Monty Python Life of Brian movie. So I want to be called a woman. Why? Why? I want to be called Loretta. Why? Because I want to have babies. Well, you can't have babies. Where's the fetus going to gestate? You don't have a womb. You going to keep it in a box? Period. End of story. So he basically is making that kind of point, although slightly more subtle. Anyway, the sheriff's deputy showed up while he was talking, and they escorted him out. He asked, hey, is this a public meeting, or isn't this a public meeting? And there was some questioning that went along about whether or not he would be allowed to speak. That's when the deputies asked him to leave. Now, in defense of Lakota's school board, it was reported, and I'll give credit to CPO for this one, the public comment policy indicates that, quote, public participants must be residents of the district or Lakota staff and have a legitimate interest in the action of the board, and have a legitimate interest. So resident, staff, coupled with legitimate interest in the action of the board. So while Josh Mandel may have a legitimate interest in the action of the board on behalf of students, generally speaking, don't think he was a resident of the Lakota district, and of course not a member of the staff. So they do like to keep opposition voices suppressed, though. Just gave me an opportunity. Thanks, Paulette, for putting a good word in for Josh Mandel. 6:45 right now, 55 KRCD Dog Station. Apparently one of the parents yielded her time to Josh to speak on her behalf. So here's a question for you. If Josh Mandel's not allowed, would you be able to hire a lawyer to retain counsel to speak for you at a school board meeting? Let's say you have fear of speaking in public and you won't be able to get your words out properly or quickly enough, given the short time limitations most of the school boards place on public comments. If the lawyer isn't a resident of the Lakota School District and certainly not an employee, could he or she still nonetheless speak for a parent? Then the next level is, okay, if a lawyer can, why can't a non-lawyer speak on behalf of another parent if they yield their time? It can be complicated. 6:46 right now, 55 KRCD Talk Station. What isn't complicated? A free blood test. It takes about 5 minutes. You go to your wellness center, and I'm talking to men out there, men who may be experiencing the unfortunate side effects of getting old. Yeah, we all know the catchphrase, it sucks getting old. And one of the reasons it sucks getting old because, well, you gain weight and you can't lose it anymore. You lose your muscle mass. Wow. 6:51, about KRCD Talk Station. Happy Wednesday. Joe Strucker's birthday. Taking it back to 91, I guess all morning. Except you said Temple of the Dogs album came out in 91 too. You played a song off that one, Joe? That was 91. God, what a great year for music that was. And again, 30 years yesterday for Soundgarden's Bad Motorfinger. rolling through at least that one great year, because don't count on another year like that happening ever again, given the state of music these days. Anyway, so happy birthday to Joe Strecker. 749-5500-800-823-TALK. We're going to have Congressman Thomas Massey coming up at 8:05, followed by Judge Ann Napolitano, and a whole lot more to talk about. And we're focusing a lot on the Biden vaccine mandate that OSHA is going to roll out, and it just rolled out a draft yesterday. And remember, this is an emergency. It has to be done pursuant to the law, and it doesn't fall within the OSHA emergency standard. So I'm telling you, this litigation's already been filed. There's going to be more suits filed. This will not be the end of it. This isn't the final word. But question whether that OSHA mandate that will be, well, ultimately ruled beyond the pale, will have exemptions for religious folks. When you turn to New York, a federal judge ruled yesterday that New York must continue allowing healthcare workers to seek exemptions from the statewide COVID-19 vaccine mandate on religious grounds. Judge in this case, David Hurd, issued a temporary restraining order a month ago after 17 doctors, nurses, and other health professionals claimed that in the lawsuit, their rights would be violated with a vaccine mandate that disallowed the exemption. The preliminary injunction issued yesterday means New York must continue to be barred from enforcing any requirement that employees deny religious exemption. He wrote, healthcare workers suing the state were likely to succeed on the merits of their constitutional claim. And as I pointed out many, many times, and it's worth bringing up again, when you go in for an injunction, it is a preliminary hearing. There's not a full hearing. It's not like going to court and sitting in front of a jury and, you know, filing your briefs and motions and making objections. You go in and you present your facts to the judge. You have to show likelihood of success on the merits. This would be your providing the judge with case law that supports your argument. And he looks at the law and he says, well, yeah, based upon the facts I see here, you do have a likelihood of success on the merits. On the merits means having a full hearing, it looks like you're going to win. That's one of the things you have to prove to get an injunction. The other thing you have to prove is irreparable harm. If you don't stop this from going into effect, then I will be harmed irreparably. And, of course, if you're sticking me with a vaccine, I can't unstick myself. And if it violates my religious convictions and you make me get stuck anyway, then you can't undo the violation of my religious tenets. It's impossible. Now, if you could pay someone, if they're made whole with money, then injunctions usually aren't issued. Because, look, so what? You know, bottom line is, if you end up winning on the merits and it looks like you're going to, they're going to have to pay you back. That can't be done in a situation like this. So what is the constitutional question? It's whether the mandate conflicts with the plaintiffs and other individuals' federally protected right to seek a religious accommodation from their individual employers. The answer to this question is clearly yes. Judge Hurd concluded the public interest lies with enforcing the guarantees enshrined in the Constitution and the federal anti-discrimination law, not the wider public health. And the plaintiffs in this case are all Christians, and they oppose the vaccine on religious mandates because vaccines can be linked to fetal cell lines. It's not actually they killed aborted babies or they aborted babies and made this particular vaccine out of newly aborted babies. No, these are stem cells that are from an aborted fetus from years and years and years ago, back in 1985 specifically. According to the reporting, COVID-19 vaccine from Johnson & Johnson is produced using an adenovirus that is grown using retinal cells that go to a fetus from 1985. So that provides the foundation for the religious exemption. Now, you may think that religious exemption is crazy. It's not for you to decide. I have friends that think anybody who believes in any religion is bat crap insane. You know, the Pastafarian types, you know, hey, well, if you believe in God, then you may as well believe in the flying spaghetti monster. Here, put your colander on your head. I have friends that are like that. They're entitled to their opinion. And so are you. And if you have deeply held religious conviction, you darn well should be able to get an exemption because that trods upon your constitutional rights. That will be the federal government infringing on, in this case, the state government with its mandate, infringing on your constitutionally protected religious convictions. Glad to see the judge put an injunction in place. 656 at 55KRC, the talk station. I will be right back after the news.
Wall Street updates that make sense.
That are day-to-day reality for people.
Simply Money. Today after Hannity on 55KRC.
KRC Talk Station. Celebrating how old we are this morning here on the 55KRC Morning Show. Because we're celebrating Joe Strecker's birthday. And I found out this morning that the album that this came off of came out 30 years ago yesterday. It's one of my favorite bands, Soundgarden. So we're having some fun this morning with 1991 music. And I won't tell you what year Joe was born, although he was born before 91 because he specifically remembers spending all of his disposable income at a record store during that year because so many awesome albums came out. Actual record store. Yes, we remember those. I know. A real, like a Wizards record, right? Like, remember a real mom and pop kind of independent record store? That's where Joe bought his albums back in. Albums. Miss the days. Anyhow, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones. Again, celebrating Joe Strecker's birthday today. You got any special plans this evening, Joseph? Nap. Well earned. Anyhow, we talked a lot this morning about the soon-to-be-completely-rolled-out vaccine mandate bill, which is really just setting up the entire world here for a bunch of legal challenges. You've got the argument that it is an unlawful OSHA mandate, that it doesn't fall within their jurisdiction because it is not, as the law requires, an emergency. It can't be dealt with on this fast-tracked way, even though it's taken a lot of time for them to roll it out. I mean, since Biden opened his mouth and said, I'm going to have OSHA issue a regulation that requires vaccines for companies with 100 employees or more, the silence has been sort of deafening. Like, well, where is it? Where is it? Where is it? It's not in place yet. They just released a draft of it yesterday, and it is on a fast track because of the so-called emergency status, but it's still going to take some time, and yes, once it is fully and firmly established and issued by OSHA, there will be legal challenges that will follow. There will be legal challenges that will follow the legal challenges that have already been made. So there's a lot of different reasons for lawsuits. I mentioned the one, this New York judge granted an injunction against the vaccine mandate from the state of New York because it violated people's individual religious rights. There was no religious exemption in there, so they issued an order, a stay on that obligation. Since we don't know specifically what's going to be in the OSHA and rule and whether they will allow for different exemptions, we're going to wait and see on that one. But it's coming, and it's coming fast. That will also upset that'll upset the whole reality going on in Texas, right? Because you'll have a federal OSHA regulation that flies in the face of Governor Abbott's executive order, which says you cannot mandate vaccines for employees in the state of Texas. Now, he's hoping that that gets embodied in the law, and in Texas, it may very well get passed into law. This currently, it's an executive order. But we already have like a couple of airlines, I guess American Airlines and Southwest Airlines said yesterday that they're going to comply with President Joe Biden's executive order and require employees to get the COVID vaccine anyway, which is comical. Not the vaccine or the idea that there's going to be a mandate out there. It's just Joe Biden can't do anything. He can't wave his executive pen and create a regulation. That has to be done through OSHA. That's what OSHA is currently doing, and that is the draft that they just put out yesterday. So for Southwest Airlines and American Airlines to say that they're complying with President Joe Biden's executive order is just that's just a crap statement. No, they went ahead, as any company can do, and imposed a vaccine mandate on their employees in anticipation of the rolling out of the OSHA order. They did it ahead of time, but there's nothing in place now that requires it unless your state has done it or your employer. And as we saw with the state of New York, when the state won't allow religious exemptions, you have an injunction slapped against you because, of course, the irreparable harm that would happen if you were forced to get a vaccine and it violated your religious rights. So that's that. And then we go to Florida, where Florida actually has in place a fine for those who mandate vaccines for their employees. And Florida's Leon County is defying the governor and the legislative branch there, forcing its employees to get a vaccine. July 28th, Leon County issued an order requiring all employees to become fully vaccinated against COVID-19 and provide verification by October 1. 700 county employees. Remember, this is the county. This is not a private business. This is the state. That's critical when we're talking about religious exemptions. A private company doesn't have to honor your Second Amendment rights or your First Amendment rights in the case of religion. Anyway, October 2nd, 700 of these county employees were vaccinated and provided documentation, so they complied with Leon County's requirements. But Leon County went ahead and fired 14 of the employees who had not submitted their documentation, leading to the fine from the state. Violation notice was received by Leon County from the Florida Department of Health. Quote, Leon County government has assessed a total fine of $3,570,000. That, according to Doug Woodleaf, the Florida Department of Health division director, in his letter giving Leon County the bad news. Payment must be made within 30 days of the final order in this matter, indicating a check or money order was acceptable. You think if Leon County sent him an Apple gift card worth $3.5 million, that would work? And this will be a lawsuit. That's the next logical step. Leon County doesn't have, I'm sure, maybe they do have $3.57 million laying around, but they sure as hell don't want to pay it to the Florida Department of Health for the vaccine mandate they have in place. So off the court they will go. Who's going to win that one? It's a good question. And the same thing's going to happen in Texas. I would like to think that Governor Abbott's Texas executive order barring private companies or any other entity from requiring vaccines ultimately gets codified in law, that they actually have a legislative action on that, because I don't have any faith whatsoever in executive orders, and some court somewhere is going to say, dude, you don't have the authority to do this. Much in the same way that, yeah, Trump was told, dude, you don't have the authority to do this. Biden doesn't seem to be told that very often, but you get the idea. Executive orders can only go so far. So that already has placed them at odds with American Airlines and Southwest. That, too, will be litigated. And then we're going to have, when OSHA rolls out, the whole idea of the supremacy clause, which controls OSHA regulation issued by the federal government or the state law, which flies directly in the face of the OSHA requirement. Texas and Florida say you're not allowed to require a vaccine and you cannot fire someone who does not have a vaccine. Clearly, the OSHA order will not. Is a polar opposite, if not completely inconsistent, with the current state of affairs in Texas and Florida, as well as other places. So who's going to win that fight? That's a legal challenge that has certainly been brought and will be brought even more. 749-5500-800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones. Look forward to hearing from you if you got a comment. And one other, a Texas judge yesterday issued a temporary restraining order against United Airlines from placing any employee on unpaid leave who received religious exemptions from the company for COVID-19 vaccinations. Also, temporarily restraining the airline from denying any late requests for religious or medical exemptions. They had a strict deadline over at American, I guess, or United, rather. And so an injunction has been put in place to ensure that religious exemptions will still apply. And, of course, the extension of the cutoff. You got a religious exemption, it transcends and sort of precedes the cutoff date. So, slowly but surely, courts are addressing this. And certainly, of all things that will be taken up by the Supreme Court at some point, this certainly seems to be one of them. 715, 55 Care CD. 720 right now, 55 KRC, the Talk Station. Wednesday, hump day, midday. Judge Anna Napolitano coming up in a little more than an hour. And in 1 hour, I'll be right in the middle of my conversation with Congressman Thomas Massey, who will begin at 8:05. In the meantime, feel free to call. Got a couple of callers online. We're going to get those calls right now. It's 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones. And never forget the website at 55KRC.com, podcast and blog page. In the order in which they're received, let's get Tom. Hey, Tom, welcome to the show. Happy Wednesday.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
I'm well. Hey, no problem.
I was just wondering, you were talking about these cases for the mandates for vaccines. But we have no official FDA-approved in the U.S. vaccine. So is that something they can use in their defense, that hey, you're mandating something that's still considered experimental?
I certainly agree with you that if I was challenging the mandates or the edicts as an attorney, I would throw that in there as well. I'm not. I have to admit, of course, it's a completely separate area of law, the Food and Drug Administration, and what constitutes emergency and what constitutes, a temporary, approval and all of that. It's multifaceted, but people make that argument all the time. Listen, this drug has only been authorized on this emergency basis. We would like a lot more stage four clinical trials. Well, what you got is the biggest clinical trial ever conducted, because literally millions and millions of people have had this vaccine now. So we'll be studying basically the entire population now to find out if people start dropping dead a year or two from now. Obviously, I hope that never happens and don't believe it will, but yeah. So it's it is another layer. It is another potential avenue, and I'm certain that somewhere in some court someone has made that argument and either succeeded or failed, or it is still a pending matter. But yeah, it's just add that to the list, the ever-growing list of legal reasons.
Yeah, I was just curious because you really don't hear people talk about this. It's still experimental. It's all vaccine, like it's a given thing. But to your point, we have the largest people.
Yeah, I mean, this is Tom. I mean, let's think about it. They sold it as something that will prevent us from getting it. Now they regularly acknowledge it has nothing to do with disease prevention. It has to do with disease severity. So this is really kind of, it puts a mute on the symptoms or makes it a lesser case of COVID, but it doesn't get rid of it. So the vaccine really, insofar as a preventative, we know does not work. That is conclusive based upon the giant clinical trial that we're going through right now. Thanks, Tom, because that allows me to point out again that you're taking a vaccine that's supposed to help you prevent the spread to other people who didn't get the vaccine. But if those who didn't get the vaccine are around you and have COVID, you're going to get COVID, which means your effort to help save other people didn't work or something. Or you're one of those people that has a breakthrough case, so you're walking around fully vaccinated, filled with COVID-19 in your breath. So you can still spread it even though you've been vaccinated. A caller called earlier. This child had been vaccinated. And the school shipped her off to quarantine because she was near someone who had COVID. And I said she should get a nasal swab and prove that she doesn't have it and get her back in school, for God's sake. Apparently, the policy didn't allow for that logical conclusion. Opie, welcome to the program. Happy Wednesday.
Happy hump day to you, too.
It's on your mind today.
I found out that me and your producer there, we was both the same model year. So.
Ah, happy birthday, man.
Well, no, mine was back in March, so. He's a little bit younger than me.
Same vintage year.
Right.
Yeah, I got you. Not the same birthday. Okay, fine.
So I'm just a little bit older and a little bit grumpier than him.
Well, you're allowed to be when you get older, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, but I won't catch up with you, so there we go.
You got something on the vaccine, Opie?
I work. I build airplane parts, which is kind of scary, and major aircraft manufacturer in Cincinnati. And they told us when this vaccine mandate thing came out that they're not going to make us get it because they're waiting to find out the constitutionality of it and everything and the law behind it.
There you go.
Because they got a bunch of high priced lawyers, but they don't want to have to use them.
Right. That's the prudent thing to do. Don't rush. Don't rush to judgment. Right. Everybody is free to do as they want in this society.
We are a government contractor.
Right.
But they're not pushing us on that. Now, but here's the really stupid thing. They do all that contact tracing and everything. Now, if you've been vaccinated and you come down with COVID or you've been around somebody with COVID, they will pay you for 2 weeks to stay home.
Okay.
If you have not been vaccinated and come down with COVID or have been around somebody that had COVID and they trace back that you may or may not have COVID, and even if you don't test positive for COVID, you have to take 2 weeks off unpaid.
And
or
you see,
use your vacation time. And let me tell you, a place is run by a bunch of dumb Democrats.
So, wow, I mean, be careful.
Does that make any sense?
No! You weren't looking at me to try to defend it. I defend the idea that they wouldn't move forward with the vaccine mandate before the government decides how it's going to impact them. And OSHA is currently drafting this emergency thing, and we'll see it soon enough. And because you're a government contractor, it will apply to you, presumably. And then there'll be legal challenges and everything else will go through. But insofar as this the policy concerning quarantine, no, it's bat crap insane. It's stupid. I mean, that's just dumb. That's just dumb. And it seems to me, isn't there an employment lawyer out there that might be able to address that? I wish I knew more about employment law, and given that we're an employment at will state here in Ohio. And I don't know whether Opie's a union contractor or not, but if he's subject to collective bargaining, then that may also be impacted. This is what's unfolding before our very eyes. The collective bargaining, most assuredly. This is at one point where, in spite of my criticism of a lot of unions, mostly government and teachers' unions, it's really a kind of a blessed position to be in, because, you know, vaccine mandates and as a condition of employment, I guarantee you, are not in your collective bargaining agreement. 727, Gary, you're gonna be next, if you don't mind holding for a moment. I want to mention, first off, thank you to everyone. I had great cancer numbers, and I haven't had a treatment since last November. It's 7:32 right now, 55 KRCD Talk Station. It is Listener Lunch Day. Swamp Water Grill is the place we're going to be, located at 3742 Kellogg Avenue. Self-described authentic Cajun and smokehouse. And I've been there, and I really had a fantastic sandwich when I was there. So I'm looking forward to heading on back, and I'm looking forward to seeing you. If you can make it, you are welcome. Everybody's welcome at 55 KRCD Listener Lunch. So, folks at Swamp Water Grill, thank you so much for, accepting the listener lunch challenge. Before I move on to local stories, Gary's on the phone with a comment. Hey, Gary, thanks for holding, and happy Wednesday to you.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
I'm well. Hope you can say the same.
Yeah, I forgot to tell Joe happy birthday, but
you just did.
Anyway, my question. I read an article the other day that said the challenges to the mandates were going to fail because. It was like in 1905, there was a mandated smallpox vaccine.
Right.
It was upheld by the Supreme Court.
Exactly.
What is different about the challenges today that makes them valid in light of that precedent?
We have talked many times with Judge Napolitano about that one. That precedent, he and I both believe, while not formally overruled, the Supreme Court has not said the 1905 decision. I think what I want to say, Jacobson, don't quote me on that, but we all know what the case we're talking about. There was a state vaccine mandate for the Spanish flu, I believe. And someone challenged it and said, you can't force me to get a vaccine. The Supreme Court said, oh, no, yes, we can, in the interest of public health. But that preceded any number of cases that have that reflect the evolution of the law in our country, an evolution that has inured to your and my personal liberty and freedom best interest. So you got, I mean, people hate Roe v. Wade, a lot of people anyway, some people embrace it, but the point being, it was predicated upon a fundamental right to control over your own body. There was the other case involving the use of condoms. The state, and every time I think about this case, I think it was the Griswold case. The state said, I'm sorry, it's illegal for even a husband and wife to use a condom. Really? That's the kind of intrusion into our lives state governments that traditionally did. Why? In the name of some sort of religious reason or something? Sorry. It's my life. It's my body. And that's exactly what the Supreme Court says. These cases came after that 1905 case when that theory in the law, this personal autonomy, did not exist. There were no cases that gave you that argument. So no one made that argument in 1905, I guess. Now you could go into court, make the same argument, and hang your hat on Roe v. Wade and Griswold and all these other cases which overruled laws on the basis that they were unconstitutionally infringing on your personal rights and liberties. And that's what this is. So, waiting for the case to be queued up, and it may be an opportunity for the Supreme Court to remind everyone that we are free in this country. Appreciate the call, okay. Gary. You take care of yourself, thanks, man. Stay well. Stay well. 735 right now. Got a comment? Love to hear from you. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Chimney Care Fireplace and Stove, they're great people. I know Jeff Kiefer, the owner of Chimney Care Fireplace and Stove. He's a really terrific guy. And, of course, they've been around since 1988. Family-owned and operated, of course, A-plus with the Better Business Bureau. Get your chimney inspected. Get your fireplace generally inspected. A complete inspection. You got a gas fireplace, you'll need an inspection as well. Did anybody clog up that chimney over the summertime, like a squirrel or maybe bird's nest or something? Maybe you need your cap replaced. Maybe you need your chimney waterproof. You know, Jeff and his crew are going to find if you got water damage leaking in there, they do chimney waterproofing on top of sweeping with certified chimney sweeps. They can reline your chimney to the extent you've had a chimney fire because you didn't have an inspection annually. Don't let that happen to you. It's an easy call, 248-9600. .740 right now, 55 KRCD Talk Stations. Less than a half hour away from Congressman Thomas Massey, who joins the program after top of the hour news. I always enjoy talking to him. vax mandates, of course, that will be a topic of conversation with the good congressman. I'm talking about Biden's war on women. Women of childbearing age and minorities, anyway. And check out his tweet thread. We're going to have some interesting engagement back and forth with the good congressman. I love talking to him. Also love talking to Judge Andrew Napolitano, of course, today. What or when secrets are not secret? That is the subject matter of the column that he put out. He puts out every Thursday night at midnight, so you'll get a copy of that after midnight. I have a copy in my hot little hands right here. Lucky, one of the lucky things about having Judge Napolitano on my program on a Wednesday. Plus, he'll talk about a Guantanamo detainee's case. You know, some folks have been just stuck in Guantanamo. This one guy since 2008. And the Supreme Court's interested now. I mean, we have concepts of due process, and while you and I don't want to necessarily extend them to terrorists, I think the main reason we didn't see specific criminal prosecutions, and I've been told this quite a few times, is because we don't want to release state secrets. We don't want to release, you know, information that the CIA gathered. And we don't want to obviously explain to the world how it is we came to know one guy was a terrorist and deserved to be locked up indefinitely in Guantanamo Bay. It may be that the evidence was gathered inappropriately. I mean, if the cops kicked in your front door and they found, you know, 4 pounds of methamphetamine laying on your or in your dresser drawer, but they didn't have a warrant to kick it in, and they weren't in high speed or they weren't in a hot pursuit of a criminal that went in to your house, or there wasn't some sort of, you know, reasonable perception that something grave was going to happen if they didn't kick the door in, they couldn't use that evidence against you. And that kind of concept would extend, of course, to the Guantanamo Bay detainees as well. So it should be a really interesting conversation. You know, sometimes you have to defend the worst out there in order to succeed for the benefit of the broader legal reality. I am entitled to due process. They could not lock me up indefinitely. They're going to have to give me a trial. There is a speedy trial provision that I don't have to waive. Quite often the speedy trial provision is waived in courtrooms and criminal proceedings because, you know, your own lawyer needs time to prepare for your defense. But absent waiving the right to a speedy trial, the prosecutors have an obligation to bring you trial within a certain time frame. And if they don't, you know, you run into court with your lawyer and get a writ of habeas corpus and let him out. You violate his constitutional rights to a speedy trial. So And again, you know, the other component is, and thank you, Eric has been my paralegal this morning. He did confirm for me, Jacobson versus Massachusetts is that 1905 case that the earlier caller referred to that I have talked about with Judge Napolitano. I do believe that case is no longer valid for the reasons I explained previously. He also cited the unholy trio, the other one, Korematsu, which the Supreme Court said it was just A-OK to single out people of Japanese descent, lock them up, and take away their property and all their constitutional rights. That is a dangerous precedent, is it not? And I don't think you'd have a Korematsu case today. We've evolved as a society. We have evolved as a country. We have recognized protected constitutional rights that we did not necessarily have recognized in earlier times in our nation's history. Think about the Dred Scott case, of all things. Isn't it a wonderful thing that now human beings are human beings are human beings, and it doesn't matter what color your skin is as to whether or not you can be owned by someone? Unbelievable. And that's a failure of a lot of folks in this whole academic discussion we have these days, is to not appreciate the evolution that our country has gone through. That through efforts of a lot of people and having to sort of swallow some unfortunate factual scenarios in courts in order to come up with a better principle. I think of the case, Brandenburg, I believe it is, where you had this Nazi, or Klansman, rather. That doesn't matter. If you're a Nazi or a Klansman, you suck. But Klansmen advocating for, in a speech, the death of black people and Jews. Whoever that, the Klan seems to hate everybody but anybody who's in a white sheet with a hood on. So hate. Fill in the blank. He was calling for their death. And was arrested and prosecuted and convicted. And I went all the way to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court said, no, that's protected speech. Now, you know, this is a case that I pointed out when Trump was standing in front of the throngs up in D.C. January 6th. Trump did not lose his constitutionally protected freedom of speech just because he was elected president. He didn't say anything that incited violence, not even remotely. But even if you could make the argument that he had some, you know, some pointed words which could be interpreted. Well, no, sorry, it's protected. As long as there's time enough for other speech to get in there and sort of offer the alternative, and certainly in that particular case there was. They were 2 miles away or whatever from the Capitol. He had time to reflect on it after Donald Trump spoke. But in the final analysis, nothing, there was no law broken, and thank God for it. So we have to suffer through the awful, awful statements of racists and Klan members and Nazis. But the greater good was served by protecting that, because you and I and our, well, more civil discourse is also protected. 7:46 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station. I'm going to mention Executive Transportation because they're offering careers. Now, if you need a... It's 7:50 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station. After top of the hour news, Congressman Thomas Massie, followed by Judge Anna Napolitano. I call out the greatest 1-2 punch in radio. Got two libertarians back to back, both of them making absolutely perfect sense, logic, and reason. And that's a hard commodity to find these days. So let's go over to the phones and find out what folks are talking about. We'll start with Doug. Hey, Doug, happy Wednesday. Welcome to the show.
How are you doing, Brian?
Doing great, man. Hope you can say the same.
Well, I'm heading into my 4-day weekend.
There you go. Lucky.
yeah. Well, I go through 3 13-hour shifts in order to get to my 4 days off. So
that's a good that's a good trade-off, Doug. When my wife was a nurse, there were well, she still is, I guess, maybe not licensed currently, but she was a nurse to 10 years when I married her. I that's what she did for a living before she went to law school, but. I loved the 3 12s because you could work 3 12-hour shifts and you were off the other 4 days. I mean, that to me is a bargain because, you know, as a litigation attorney, every day, including most Saturdays, were 12-hour days. You know, it just depends on what profession you're in. Go ahead, Doug. Tell me what you called about.
Hey, well, like I told Joe, I'm 61 plus years of age. in the last, I'd say 3 to 5 years, I've never seen so much stupidity as I've seen in Washington, D.C. Just the bickering and the fighting and just, you know, at times, Brian, I feel like the American people are in a tug of war as the rope between the Democrats and the Republicans. And it just, it's mind-boggling because at times, Brian, I actually have to turn your program off because it's so depressing what we are going through right now.
Yeah.
I mean, just the lying, childish attitudes, mostly on the blue side of the aisle, but also at times on the red side of the aisle.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, and...
I know where you're coming from, Doug. I do. I feel it every single day. I mean, there are some days, you know, it's hard to get my feet on the floor when I get out of bed in the morning because of exactly what you're saying. It can be extremely depressing, wearing on your heart and your mind and your conscience, particularly if you're someone like you or me who really, truly loves this country and the freedoms that we enjoy here that do not exist elsewhere. And to see them gradually being eroded away, and it's no longer seems to be gradual. It seems to me, you know, picking up steam like a snowball rolling down a hill and getting bigger. Our freedoms are eroding, and it's heartbreaking. But, you know, I have to point out, you know, a lot of times you have to step back and say, well, has it always been this way? The internet has provided a vehicle for us to see in real time things that have been going on for millennia that we never knew about. Did you know that there was a racist action that happened in, you know, pick a country or pick a city in the country 15, 20 years ago, some act of racism? You would never even known about it. It never would have picked up on anybody's radar that there was a police-involved shooting in, you know, Poughkeepsie, Iowa. Would you have known about that? Would there have been some group or cause out there that would have elevated it to everybody's attention? No, they couldn't. You could post it in your local newspaper, and unless the AP got a hold of it or some other national paper saw it and thought it was newsworthy for the nation, it wouldn't have been repeated. Now everything looks like it's the most important thing in the world, and oh my God, we're all going to die. La! We need action. And that allows people in higher powers, our elected officials, to feel as if they must do something. Oh my God, there's a problem in the world. I have a solution for it. Here, all we need to do is pass a law or take more money from you or redistribute wealth or whatever, and the problem's going to go away. No, no. The problem has existed since the dawn of mankind. You know, the poor you will have among, you know, me you only get for a short period of time. The poor, they're going to be around forever. And Jesus said something along those lines. It's just a reality. Thus, it has ever been. The problem is, the internet makes you think, thus, it has not ever been. And this is all changing. Now, I will admit that there is some rapid change going on. Moving toward the left, the division is being fostered and encouraged. The division was always out there. It's just fomented because of the ease of communication. One loud, squeaky wheel on the internet can reach millions of people, and then it sounds like it's a cause. Oh, my God, the place is burning down. We've got to do something. No, no. It's one squeaky wheel. That, and, you know, in the context of the LGBT community, you know, Dave Chappelle's getting all kinds of crap from the trans community. You know, they represent some infinitesimally small chunk of the population. You would think that, you know, every other person you walk down the street was a transvestite. No, they're not. They're just really, really loud, and they're successful because of the internet only. They're successful at canceling people. They're successful at canceling people because of the internet. That coach on that football team, absent telecommunications and emails, wouldn't have been fired. You'd have never known that he said what he said. Problem is, he typed it up in an email and sent it off. Guess what's permanent? The email record. Now, why we don't focus on Hunter Biden's emails and its connections with the Russians and the Chinese and all that, that's because there's bias in the media. They want to focus on some things to get you ginned up and agitated and divided, but not other things, which they really should look at because of, they're illegal and they're corrupt. But sadly, they're illegal and corrupt, but that inures to the wrong side of the political spectrum for them, so we won't tell you about it. Good hearing from you, man. Stay well, my friend. Keep your chin up. 757, 55 KRC, the talk station. Congressman Massey will be up next. Hope you can stick around.
In an ever-changing world, we've become super spreaders of information.
Make it your business to stay informed.
55 KRC, the talk station.
Let's go, Brandon.
Coming up on 8:06 here at 55 KRC, the talk station. Brian Thomas right here. Glad to have Judge Trecker, executive producer, in there. And happy birthday again to Judge Trecker. And, of course, always puts a smile on my face to see that Congressman Thomas Massey's on the rundown. Welcome back, Congressman Massey. Great to have you on the program.
It's great to be here. I just stayed in a Holiday Inn last night, so I am ready to rock and roll this morning.
Okay. Can I ask what the connection is with the Holiday Inn and your readiness to engage in these heady conversations?
Well, yesterday we raised the debt limit, and I don't fly anymore. Haven't flown for 2 or 3 months because of their stupid mask mandate. So I drive to D.C., and yesterday I drove the whole way to D.C. to take this vote and then got halfway home before I decided to stop and spend the night. But let me tell you how you said I put a smile on your face. Wait till you hear this. You're either going to cry or you're going to laugh when I tell you how they raised the debt limit last night in Congress. We passed a bill, of course I voted against it, called Promoting Physical Activities for Americans Act. It was a House amendment to a Senate bill that the Senate amended, and then the House concurred in the amendment. And what these amendments had stripped all the text from the bill to promote physical activity for Americans and replaced it with raising the debt limit by $480 billion.
Only in Washington. That is insane.
This is either the height of non-situational awareness or a cruel joke on Americans to call the bill that raised the debt limit $500 billion, to call it promoting physical activity for Americans, because it's going to take a lot of physical activity from hardworking Americans to pay off that debt.
Yeah, and I just have to sort of double down, or at least confirm, I think, the point that you made really clear, which is there's nothing in that that relates to promoting physical activity anymore, right?
No. There's not. There's no – the only thing that survived from the original bill
is the name.
Is the title, yeah.
Form over substance, is that what that is?
Well, you know, there may have been people last night in the House of Representatives who voted on this bill thinking they were going to promote physical activity.
Oh, I guarantee you there were. Yeah, there's no question in my mind, Congressman Massey, about that. You got guys in Congress who think that Guam can capsize, for God's sake. Of course there's people like that.
Here's the other thing you need to know. 197 of my 434 colleagues voted by proxy yesterday, which means they collected a salary but did not come to work. They phoned in their vote, and to do so have to sign an affidavit saying that COVID is preventing them from coming to Congress.
Well, they're all vaccinated, aren't they?
Yes, I would assume, like the Democrats, all of them claim to be vaccinated. Most of the 197 were Democrats, but some of them were Republicans. But how many of them went to the Met Gala or to some other fundraiser? Football game, not prevented by COVID, but were prevented from coming last night to raise the debt limit $500 billion because of COVID. And they have to attest to that fact in order to vote by proxy, right. i.e. to vote remotely without coming to work.
Well, the lawyer in me wants to walk through a hypothetical on this one, Congressman Massey. So let's say someone does fill out the affidavit and say it's COVID-19 related and I'm not coming in, so here's my proxy vote. And, because of the omnipresence or ever-present the cell phone cameras and videos, we've got video footage or cell phone footage or actual photographs or ticket stubs or something showing that same person at a football game on Sunday without a mask on, so clearly not concerned about it. Now, is there a fine, a penalty, something associated with lying?
Well, they could be turned into either the Committee on Ethics or the Office for Congressional Ethics. and you just gave me an idea.
Uh-huh.
So if anybody has video ticket stubs or anything like that, I think it should be submitted. Of course, This is another little known fact about Congress. All the committees are assigned, the membership is assigned in proportion to the membership of the whole House. So, for instance, if 60% of the whole House is controlled by Democrats, then 60% of each committee would be controlled by Democrats. But the Ethics Committee is the only committee on which there are equal number of Republicans and Democrats. And this is so if they vote on something to convict a Democrat, they will tie because every Republican will vote no or
right.
vote yes and every Democrat votes no and vice versa. So they always end up in a tie, or they will trade convictions. They'll say, we'll let your guy off if you let my guy off. And so because there are equal number of votes in the Ethics Committee, virtually nobody gets called up on something.
That speaks to their high ethics right there, Congressman Massey. Golly.
Now, the exception to this was my conviction for the mask fine, because I still refuse to wear a mask on the floor of the House. And I was fined $500 for not wearing the mask. Now, to overturn my fine would require a majority of the Ethics Committee. And every Republican will vote to overturn my fine, but no Democrat will. So, you end up in a stalemate if you're guilty until proven innocent.
Wow. And there's no legal recourse for that, is there? I mean, you couldn't go into a civil court and claim that you've had your property taken away from you without due process or something.
Well, it's a star chamber. It's a kangaroo court in the Ethics Committee. But attorney Chris Weist from Northern Kentucky is leading a lawsuit for me and three other congressmen in federal court against Nancy Pelosi, the Sergeant at Arms, and the House Administrator for changing our salaries without passing a law allowing them to change our salaries, because they direct deposited those fines from our salaries, thereby reducing our salaries.
See, you did explain that to my listening audience and me at one point, and I knew there was a legitimate legal challenge that transcended the politics and the rules that, of course, are completely governed by and independent of any civil courts or constitution. That's, like you said, it's your star chamber. You're stuck with the rules that are there, and that's all there is to it. There's no court that could intervene. But your constitutional challenge is a valid one, because she did change your salary by taking $500 out of your paycheck. So,
correct.
How many years from now will that finally see the light of an adjudicated an opinion there, Congressman?
Probably about a year. Pelosi has filed a motion to dismiss.
Of course.
And we'll see how that goes. And, of course, I don't think they'll dismiss the case.
No, they won't.
I mean, And so they'll have to hear the case, and then it'll go to district circuit, and then we'll take it to the Supreme Court if the Supreme Court will hear it. And I think they should. There are four congressmen on this case.
Well, this is the easiest kind of case to argue in front of a court, Congressman, because the defendant always files a motion to dismiss, failure to state a claim upon which relief can be granted, et cetera, et cetera. That gets denied because your claim does have merit. The Constitution says what it says, and this alters your pay. So what your lawyer will do is submit a motion for summary judgment. These are the undisputed facts. Here is the law. This is what the Constitution said. This is the reality of it. Grant me summary judgment. And that will be an interesting opinion to read, because I have a feeling you'll win. I mean, I truly do.
Well, we'll probably lose. We may lose in the lower courts, but I think we're going to win at the Supreme Court, because, like you said, there's no dispute of the facts.
Right.
Everything we did was on C-SPAN cameras. The only thing that's in question is her application or violation of the law.
Exactly.
There's no dispute of the facts.
Exactly. Which means you have no need for a jury. It's
just
a statement of uncontested facts. So you're in good shape. I think you're on solid ground, Congressman. I really do. And I hope.
Well, we'll know in a couple years, right?
Yes, we will. Finally, when the wheels of justice spinning so slowly. All right. Well, I'll tell you what, rather than dive on into vax mandates, because it looks like OSHA is finally coming out with something and finding out about the Biden war on women and childbearing age childbearing age. Well, pause. It's going on 8:15 more with Congressman Massey after I mentioned Home Helpers Home Care to help you with the loved one that you can't be there for on certain occasions. Or maybe there's a set schedule where you can't be there for, let's say, mom. Living in a senior environment, or maybe on her own, still at home. I always think of my mother-in-law. She's 96 and still lives by herself out on the farm. you know, if my wife, we live close to her, which we don't, was stopping by every day to check on her and help her with, you know, getting around or whatever, then there'd be times when she couldn't be there. Home Helpers Home Care is there when you can.
Let's go, Brandon.
819 55 KRC, the talk station. Let's go, Brandon. Brian Thomas here with Congressman Thomas Massie. I saw your Twitter comment about that, about telling hospital staff shortage and the supply chain issues have nothing to do with Joe Biden's policies. So basically, Jack's trying to convince us the economy is chanting, let's go, Brandon. We all know what that means. Can't use it because the FCC won't allow us, but the substitute chant is just side-splittingly comical. Congressman Massie, I saw he tweeted that out the other day.
Yeah, it's. I mean, if you look, the media is trying to cover up for what Biden is doing to the economy. They're trying to blame the shortages and the long lines and the lack of healthcare workers. They're trying to blame it on everything but his destructive mandates, which are – they are destructive to our economy. And they're, you know, I've said that, and I stand by this, and no Democrat has challenged me yet. I'm amazed I haven't gotten fact checked on this, because when they check the facts, they're going to find out I'm right. Most of the people who've been fired in the healthcare industry are women of childbearing age. And this is Joe Biden's war on women. Huh. The other women of childbearing age who are being affected are the ones whose kids haven't been able to go to school. You know, they talk about, you know, they can't get health care and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and, you know, I'm not putting down public education. I'm K through 12. I'm a product of it, and all of my kids and my wife as well. But look, if your mom works and and there's no school to go to, it presents a problem in terms of daycare. And so everything from what the governor, our governor is doing, I call him the Andy variant of the Bashir virus, but everything from the Andy variant to Biden has caused this, their policies.
Well, you obviously clearly weren't looking for an argument on that. It's just, it's simple fact. And, you know, it's funny because as you were saying that, the childcare situation, well, and I obviously have to backpedal a little bit. I was getting ready to say, well, they're going to get ready to give everybody pre-K education and basically free childcare for everyone's pre-kindergarten age children, which is basically just getting them in the indoctrination system earlier, because clearly we have them K through college surrounded by socialists. But getting them in that earlier, but clearly if COVID is shutting down K through 12 education, there's not going to be any pre-K education either. So your point remains a valid one. It is impacting women and those of lower socioeconomic status much harder than it is anybody else.
Workforce participation of women of childbearing age is going to go down. I guarantee if you track this, and I'm sure the labor, you know, Bureau of Labor tracks these sort of things. We're going to see this. You're seeing it right now. But the people who are writing me letters and calling me up and pleading for me to do something because they're going to be fired from their job because they will not take the vaccine, and in many cases they've already had COVID, 80% of them are women. And they want to keep their jobs.
Yeah.
They just can't figure out a way to do it. By the way, you mentioned that they're about to come out with some rules from the OSHA or Department of Labor. Right now, as far as I know, there is no rule.
No, there isn't.
Joe Biden, there's nobody can get standing in a court to sue over this and get an injunction against it because it doesn't exist. The mandate, although I will say this, Biden has expanded sort of the definition of what a government contractor is. He's calling all the airlines government contractors. I told somebody who runs a restaurant the other day asked me what would his penalty be if he didn't enforce the vaccine mandate. I said, well, number one, it doesn't exist. Biden has bluffed so far to this point. He said, well, what about the airlines? I said, well, just make sure you don't cater a dinner for the IRS or the FBI, or else Biden will call you a government contractor
yeah.
and subject you to these things. But I would say to business owners, you know, somebody's going to have to adjudicate, and I think it's going to be the business owner, whether you give a medical exemption or a with those.
Yeah, there have already been a couple of cases. Actually, there was a New York case. Just the injunction was issued yesterday in a New York court, federal court, against New York state mandate because they did not allow religious exemptions. So we already have at least one precedent on that. And, you know, the other thing we're going to have on this one, when OSHA finally does issue its quote-unquote emergency temporary standard, and you and I know darn well this is not an emergency standard. I mean, this has turned into like the flu. This is going to be an all-time consequence. It isn't subjected to the lengthier process for federal rulemaking. This allows this expedited advancement of this OSHA regulation, but it hasn't been issued. And it only applies to those exposed to grave danger from toxic or physically harmful substances or agents or from new hazard, and it must be necessary to protect employees from such danger. The legal challenge is going to be right out of the gate that OSHA does not have the authority for whatever rule it throws out with regard to a vaccine mandate. It doesn't meet the emergency standard. So it's going to have to go through the lengthier process, which is going to be a long time, apparently.
Hello, Brian.
Yeah. You there?
I got cut off. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. You got cut off just briefly a moment ago. I was just only making the point that the part of the legal challenge will be OSHA doesn't have the authority to issue this emergency standard.
And I think they're going to lose. I think OSHA's going to lose and Biden's going to lose. If we look at the CDC eviction moratorium, which was shot down by the Supreme Court.
Yes.
They said, you don't have the authority. This, I mean, if anybody has the authority, it would be Congress. But I don't even think we have the constitutional authority to do it. Now, the Supreme Court may disagree with that, but I think they will agree that you can't promulgate a rule and call it an emergency without some kind of legislative authority being granted from our branch of government.
Well, and as Judge Napolitano, who will be on next, and I have talked about before, I do not believe the legislative branch has the authority for the vax mandate, even though, in spite of that Jacobson versus Massachusetts case from 1905, the law has evolved dramatically since back then in terms of our personal liberties and freedoms. Think about Griswold, Roe v. Wade, and others. Liberty over our and personal autonomy over our bodies. So what used to be the law here is no longer the law, and I do believe any mandate from Congress would get struck down because it interferes and intrudes with our constitutional freedoms and protections.
And the court case they always cite, that was a state case.
Yeah. State mandate.
And by the way, you can't ignore the science. Like if the Supreme Court looked at this, they're going to have to acknowledge, this would be great to get it acknowledged by the Supreme Court, that immunity conferred by prior infection is as good or better than the vaccines that are being given right now. You know, George Washington, General George Washington, not President George, General George Washington, when he mandated his soldiers to take the vaccine, if you go back and look at what he wrote, he said, all those who've not had it, who've not had smallpox, need to take the inoculation. So he recognized immunity from prior infection because he himself had smallpox when he was a teenager. And so he didn't take the vaccine after that. So anyway, this is it's like the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey used to say. Everybody leaves out the rest of the story, or at least the liberals do.
Congressman Massey, it is always a distinct pleasure to have on the program. Anytime, anytime, any day is good with me. In between now and then, best of health. Safe travels to you as well, sir, and I'll look forward to the next time we get to talk.
All right. Thank you, Brian, and good day to your listeners.
I appreciate that. Coming up, Judge Anna Napolitano, right after I mentioned Cullen Electric, my friends at Cullen. .831 at 55KRC, the talk station. Of course, Chuck Ingram there referring to friend of the show, good man, and a good, solid constitutional defender, Judge Anna Napolitano. Welcome back to the 55KRC Morning Show. I always look forward to it.
Good morning. I have to thank Chuck Ingram because the American League Championship Series for Yankee fans is a nightmare. The Astros against the Red Sox.
Yeah.
I mean, the two most hated teams for Yankee fans. Oh, well.
You just don't watch baseball then anymore for the balance of the season and kick it in next spring.
Right.
Hey, let's see here. When are secrets not secrets? This, the subject matter and the caption of Judge Anna Napolitano's column, which will be released tonight at midnight. I am happy to have a copy of it in my hand and fascinated by the subject matter of it. Let us talk about this, Your Honor. This involves the the individual named Abu Zubaydah.
Yes.
Who has been in Guantanamo Bay now since forever.
He's been in Guantanamo Bay. Well, he's been in the custody of American authorities since 2002, was tortured repeatedly and brutally for 4 years. The government acknowledges this. By Polish authorities, while American authorities watched, supervised, and directed for 4 years, and then was shipped to Guantanamo Bay. The Bush administration claimed he was a high-ranking al-Qaeda member. At the end of the 4 years of torture, the CIA told the Department of Justice and investigators for the United States Senate that he was not a member of al-Qaeda, and they had no evidence of wrongdoing on his part.
Whoops.
Instead of freeing him, they shipped him to Guantanamo Bay. So he's been there since 2006 with no charges filed against him. He subpoenaed the Justice Department for copies of records of his torture, and the Justice Department said, we can't release them because they are state secrets. Now, this is the government's favorite ploy whenever it doesn't want to reveal wrongdoing, criminal behavior, or behavior that is embarrassing and claims state secrets. And they have persuaded federal judges that these secrets are so secret that they can't even share them in secret with federal judges to determine if they truly are secret, if you still follow. The whole state secret doctrine is a ploy and began with an airplane crash in 1948. Of a military jet, and the surviving spouses of the crew that was killed in this crash sued the government, not for money, because they had already received money from the government. Their husbands were employees of the government, but to find out who manufactured the plane and what the cause of the crash was. The government said, state secrets, we can't reveal it to you. The Supreme Court upheld that. In 1953, the Supreme Court upheld it. In 2001, reporters filed an Freedom of Information Act request to find out what the secrets were, and a federal judge ordered them revealed.
Aha! Uh-huh.
There were none. There were no state secrets. The whole thing was a ploy. The whole doctrine is based on a ploy and a fraud, and everybody in the oral argument in the Supreme Court courtroom last week knew that, and yet the government still acted as if it were a legitimate, valid, compelling legal doctrine.
But okay,
to make this even worse and more absurd, Brian, the prosecutor, the lawyer representing the government, said, in wartime, our ability to keep secrets is enhanced. Whereupon Justice Brett Kavanaugh said, what war are we fighting? And the prosecutor said, are you ready for this? We're fighting a war in Afghanistan. In Afghanistan? That's news to Joe Biden and to everybody else in the world who knows we left.
No, this argument was made just recently after the debacle that was the withdrawal from Afghanistan. This lawyer is still making the argument that we're that's comical. A sad, pathetic, frightening, but still comical at the same time, Your Honor.
It shows you the depth of deception to which the government will go when it doesn't want to admit wrongdoing.
Okay.
Now, to make it even more absurd, and why did I call this column, When is a Secret Not Secret? The government acknowledges that this torture was supervised by two American psychologists who were hired by the CIA.
Okay.
These are the people that came up with the concept of waterboarding and other torturous methods.
Okay.
They wrote a book about it in which they acknowledged what they did. So how the heck is this a secret? Why can't they be subpoenaed by this by the lawyers for Zubaydah who are trying to prove their case?
So Zubaydah asked for the names of the folks. We won't give it to them because they say it's a state secret. And, oh, by the way, here's a copy of their book talking about what they did to your client, lawyer.
Precisely.
That is insane. But, you know, the other component of this, and I've mentioned this before, you pointed out, and there is no denial by our side. The CIA says, no, sorry, we got it wrong. He's not a member of al-Qaeda. Sucks to be him because we tortured him for 4 years. But he's not. But he's still being held. Now, the other component of this is, even if he was a member of al-Qaeda, the problem is nobody ever gets prosecuted, like, criminally for the war crimes they did or for anything else, because the state secrets arguments comes in, right? It's almost like that fruit of the poison tree document doctrine. How we obtained the information was unlawful and therefore not usable in a court of law, or alternatively, how we got the information is really secret. And if the world knew about it, then our bad friends, our foes, our enemies would know how we're gathering information. It would take steps to undermine us.
It's a catch-22.
It is.
We know you're bad, but we can't prosecute you because we can't reveal how we acquired the evidence against you. The solution to that is let the person go, particularly in this case where the CIA told investigators for the Senate and the Justice Department, this guy's harmless. We have no evidence against him.
Well, after being tortured for 4 years, I don't know. They may have made a friend of Al-Qaeda out of him. You know what I'm saying?
You know, it's a shame that this torture regime under the George W. Bush administration, which was eventually shut down by legislation, is still rearing its head. I have heard, and I don't know if this is true, that these psychologists and the CIA agents were pardoned by Bush, which, of course, would absolve them of the criminal liability for the torture. But, of course, Bush couldn't pardon the Polish intelligence agents who actually conducted the torture under American supervision. Well, they're the subject of criminal investigations in Poland. And in Poland, the Polish prosecutors have asked the U.S. prosecutors for records of the torture, and the U.S. prosecutors are saying, surprise, state secrets.
Oh, jeez. So send them over a copy of the book.
And the state secrets doctrine should not exist, or it should at least be modified so that federal judges can look at the secrets and decide if they're secret and decide if their revelation would really adversely harm national security or if this is just a ploy to make some evildoer look good.
Fair enough. Real quick on the two things I want to know. The state secrets doctrine that's being asserted and was asserted even back in 1948, that is not pursuant to legislation. You can't point to something that says here
Correct.
Is when this doctrine applies.
Okay. Correct.
This is made
a
whole cloth.
Made rule.
Made it up. All right, whole cloth. That will be legislating from the bench for those keeping track at home. Now, the other component of this lawsuit where these documents and records were being caught is the European Court of Human Rights?
No, the lawsuit is an American lawsuit, which is why it's before the Supreme Court of the United States.
I see.
Because when the Justice Department said to the Polish prosecutors, we can't give you the documents you want because of state secrets, Zubaida's lawyers sued actually subpoenaed the Justice Department for the documents, and the Justice Department said, we're not going to comply with your subpoena because of state secrets. So this is an American lawsuit. There's a companion lawsuit to free him from Guantanamo Bay. Look, I don't know if he's a good guy or a bad guy, but I know the basics of American due process. The government can't arrest somebody and keep them in jail without showing its cards. And in this case, there are no cards to show. And if they can do this to this character who was picked up by some militia in Pakistan in 2002 and get away with it, they can do it to anybody.
That is so frightening. And that's, you know, and I talked to my listeners about this morning in anticipation of our conversation. And I said, you know, sometimes bad facts make bad law, but a lot of times, you know, it's the bad facts that are tough to swallow that result in positives. Like we talked previously about, you know, the Griswold case, or we talked about Brandenburg, you know, that evil, 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 foul Klan member who espoused murder. His speech was protected. So you got to swallow something bad in order to bring about a greater good. In
Correct.
This particular case, even if this guy is a bad guy, they're not prosecuting, not trying him, not giving him a forum, a vehicle to defend himself or to be convicted of a crime is in and of itself just it flies in the face of everything we stand for as a nation.
And it flies in the face of the oath that federal prosecutors took to uphold the Constitution and to comply with the laws, including the laws that make torture a crime.
Judge Andrew Napolitano, I love our conversations. Thank you so much.
Brian.
Next Wednesday.
No matter what it is, no matter how grisly the subject.
It's so important, though. It really is. And I'm glad you and I can engage in these discussions and that my listening audience gets the benefit of, you know, my enjoyment of these conversations. Until next Wednesday, my friend, I wish you the best of health.
Back at you. All the best, Brian.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
841, 55 KRC, the talk station. Coming up. We're going to be talking to Joyce Lovins Browning. She's got an Empower You seminar, The Body Snatcher's Wife. That'll be up right after I mentioned Union Bank. Suzette Lozekamp specifically, she is with Union Bank, and you want to talk to Suzette about your mortgage situation, whether you're looking for a mortgage or whether you got one already and you want to see if you can't maybe get some equity out of your home. With home prices gone through the roof, you know your home is worth more if you've been there for a while. And that means if you're still paying PMI, for example, may you get a reappraisal and then get, you know, refinance and get rid of that stuff. The other thing is, you